Welcome to the Passive with Property podcast, hosted by Dragan Domofsky and co-host Amanda Calabria. With over two decades of property investing, Dragan is a qualified property investment advisor and buyer's agent. We're committed to the education of both first-time and seasoned investors in property investment and wealth creation. The Passive with Property podcast is brought to you by the Buyers Agency Australia.
Hi guys, welcome to the podcast. I'm Dragan Domofsky, and as always, we have Amanda Calabria with us, our co-host. Today, we have a guest. We have Stu Benson from Benson Auctions. Welcome to the podcast, Stu.
Good morning, good morning. Nice. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Thanks for coming on. Amanda, do you want to kick it off?
Yeah, all right. Well, let's start with who you are, Stu. So we've said that you're an auctioneer, but you're an independent auctioneer. So tell us a little about yourself and your background.
Okay. So I've been in the real estate industry for 23 years, which is my entire professional life after high school. It's all I've ever done. It's what I love. Did my first 3 years in a real estate agency, an independent boutique office in Castle Hill. And it was I guess what you would call now an associate agent. It wasn't called that back in the day. And I would do all the office related tasks and putting up corner signs. And then that eventually grew into jumping into listing presentations with the principal. And then he let me run my own race in my own territory and started to list and sell a couple. And then I slightly diverted. I got a tap on the shoulder one day. I was down at the local newspaper. I was the only person in the office. This is back in 2001, 2002. Mm-hmm. I was the only person in the office who knew how to use the computer and the email. Most of the team were in their 40s and 50s, and email just wasn't their thing. So luckily, the internet was rising in terms of its popularity and accessibility for vendors and people who were doing some market research to actually send an email to an agency. There wasn't a thing. Agents used to be the gatekeeper of all things information regarding real estate. You used to walk past their shop front. You used to knock on their door. You used to come inside. You used to jump
in the back. My favorite book, The Homes Pictorial.
Yeah, The Homes Pictorial. Yeah.
Love that.
You know, agents used to jump in the back seat of an agent's car and they would take you to three or four listings and usher you around.
That's right.
But then the internet started to pick up, and luckily I was just in that gen that got it and could open up an email and send one and things like that. Yeah. So people were starting to send inquiries online or wanting appraisals, and I was the only person in the office who actually got those. So I was getting my foot in the door because of that.
Yeah.
That tech focus interested me. I used to drop down to the local newspaper every week and drop off our ads. They were on a CD-ROM.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So we used to burn our photographs.
Remember those?
Very young, right?
I know. Right? So half of our audience, like, what is he talking about? So we would burn our photographs digital camera onto a CD-ROM. I would drop it down at the newspaper. They would then extract that, lay it out on a piece of paper. I would come down and then proof that the right properties were sitting next to the right text. Mm-hmm. And one day the sales manager then tapped me on the shoulder and said, listen, we need somebody that gets real estate, but gets marketing, gets advertising, gets technology.
I was wondering how you made the leap to auctioneering.
Yeah. So, well, look, he said to me, would you ever consider working for us? Where the domain, the insert inside the paper is about to launch an app, mm-hmm. and we're about to go really big online. We're about to try and compete with realestate.com.au, and we'd love somebody who was young and got it to come in, who gets real estate. So I jumped over to Fairfax at the time, and I worked for Fairfax Media for 15 years and in the digital space, as the apps grew and the popularity of the apps and the online space grew, I was there helping to push and drive it. I did a couple of presentations when I was at Domain in a role that I progressed into, which was a national spokesperson role. And a couple of agents saw me at some of these things and said, have you ever considered being an auctioneer? Have you ever considered public speaking as a career? And I hadn't, but given my real estate background and then my ability to talk and hold forums, mm-hmm. I thought I should consider it. So I went and got my accreditation. Reached out to those agents and said, listen, I'm ready to go. Would you give me a go? And they said, yeah, absolutely. And it kind of just started from there. So it was a little bit of right place, right time.
Sure.
But you're not currently aligned with a sales office, are you?
No, so I'm fully independent. Benson Auctions has just celebrated its 15th anniversary in business. And
congratulations.
Yeah, proud. Thank you very much. Yeah. 15 years for a small business is
it's pretty good.
Not bad. Yeah, yeah. So proudly independent, which means that I can be used by any agency, any group.
Mm-hmm.
some agencies and some groups do have in-house corporate auctioneers, and so they're pushed from their corporate, you know, head office to just use those in-house auctioneers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Look, I see a bit of conflict with that. Like a lot of those, you know, they're on the ticket. They're getting a clip, or they're getting paid from corporate and things like that. So I wonder about the true independence of offering their services and truly working for a vendor when they are incentivized by somebody within the organization. So
Because ultimately they want the sale to go through, whereas you're a flat fee, whether it sells or doesn't sell.
Yeah. Oh, look. Yeah. That's one big part of it. My name's above the door, so my reputation is on the line. I don't wake up on Monday morning and open up my diary to a diary full of bookings from corporate, because the corporate agents have to use the corporate auctioneers. Mm-hmm. So my incentivization at each and every auction is a little bit different because I've got to put on a good show. I've got to work for the vendor. I've got to get a remarkable result, or at the very least, if a property passes in, it has to be done to the best of my ability, because my workflow isn't guaranteed. My reputation is what delivers that to me. So I think that's why Sydney in particular has so many very good independent auctioneers, because we're driven to succeed because of that having a full diary next Monday.
Okay, Stu, so what does a typical auction day look like behind the scenes?
Yeah, interesting question. I get a lot of work experience kids wanting to come out, and they get their heads blown by just how frantic and busy it is. A good auctioneer, particularly in the Sydney metropolitan market, could call anywhere from 8 to 12, 14 auctions a day.
Wow. Really?
Yeah.
That much?
So they're on 45-minute gaps typically. If you are maybe two streets away or three streets away from your auction properties, you might be able to slide them into half an hour time slots. I do know this from auctioneers in and around maybe the inner west of Sydney, where properties are really condensed and close in, and it could only take you 2 minutes, or maybe you even park and walk from one to the other because we're in an adjacent laneway. So every 45 minutes I will auction a property, and that will typically start at 9 or 9:30.
Mm-hmm.
And then I will literally just go from every 45-minute time slot.
Okay.
In winter, that will be up until about 5:30 p.m. Daylight saving, I could go up to 7, 7:30 p.m. There are some agents and some vendors who prefer the end of the day. The end of the day allows them to have their entire team there. They've finished their open homes for the day. The other auctions that might have taken place, they can have the whole team on board and really help that vendor and the crowd facilitate the auction. Some properties sit high and proud within the suburb and really benefit from the evening glow or the dusk glow or the sunset or the mountain views.
Yeah.
And there are some vendors who really particularly prefer that. Or everybody's home from a busy Saturday. There's no more soccer, cricket, netball. Yep. Done the shops, done the party, everybody's home. You can really call up the neighborhood and get everybody there. And the ones at the end of the day, particularly in summertime, they almost become like an event. And it's great for the agents.
Love when Mr. Whippy shows up.
Yeah, well, there you go. You have Mr. Whippy van, or some of the coffee van guys now. Yeah. When the weather gets a little bit warmer, they're doing like margaritas and things in the back of the van. And,
oh, bring it on.
Yeah, so not a bad place. Yeah.
Especially you want the bidders to be drinking margaritas.
Bid responsibly. Bid responsibly.
How many of those contracts are still valid?
Don't ask me. But typically, it really does depend on the weather, the seasonality, and of course the buoyancy of the market. Don't get me wrong, I have weekends where, you know, I might call six on a Saturday, not a great Saturday for me. Ordinarily I want to fill every time slot, and that would generally run me to 10 or so. And it's back to back and it's frantic.
So Stu, okay, for listeners out there, we know the answer to this, but why would one of our listeners who wants to sell their property use an auctioneer than just, you know,
rather than private treaty?
Private treaty, yeah.
Sure. Look, I think the ethos behind going to auction is that there is absolutely no barrier on the price. There is no cap on the price. We don't go to the market asking for a price, and that price then might attract a certain amount of buyers that then fluctuate around that price, and we might go give or take 5% or 10% higher or above than that, but we kind of have told the market that this ballpark will own this property. Whereas with the auction process, literally the sky's the limit. I have sold properties for $500,000, $1 million, more than $1 million above reserve.
Is that because people get emotional, or because it's worth that?
If two people are going toe-to-toe at any given property, they're determining the value, not me, not the vendor, not the agent.
And it's fully transparent.
And it's transparent. They get to see each other, hear each other. And when the hammer drops, yes, they might have spent $1 million more than the reserve. Yes, they might have.
You can tell you're a Sydney auctioneer.
Just a flippin' million. Yeah. Yeah, our poor agents listening to this up in, you know, Rockhampton are going, what?
I get a whole house for that.
Yeah. So, or a couple. Yeah, there is that element. Yes, I paid $1 million above reserve.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I paid $5,000 more than what somebody else would have paid for
it. And I knew
it.
That bidder was legit. It's not the agent, you know, making up another offer that you then have to beat.
With private treaty, that's a big element of private treaty that it's you don't know. You know, does that buyer exist?
There's always another buyer.
There's always that other buyer. That other buyer.
Always managed to find that buyer just before
you're about to sign the contract. And so the transparency of the auction forum does allow everybody to see, you know, and sometimes that plays to the advantage of the bidder. They turn up and they're the only bidder, which then lets them negotiate directly with the agent and the auctioneer and get a deal done.
Yeah.
Do you see that happen often, or do they tend to cancel auctions if that's a risk?
Depends on the vendor, right?
Yeah. Look, a lot of the time it does go back to the vendor. The agent will say to them, look, the reality is we're probably looking at one, maybe two. What do you want to do? If the vendor has to sell, wants to sell, or are that committed to the process, they understand that that is the market for my home.
Yep.
My home just isn't a home at the moment that is going to have 10 people fawning over it, fighting for it and trying to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, so long as the vendor has had been guided correctly by the agent, there's an understanding that it's still the best way to transact.
Sure.
One is better than none. If you've got, and I tell every agent, don't cancel. Like if you've got one bidder, let's run this thing because that is the market for this property. I'd love it to be 4 or 5 or 10, but it's not. The market for this property is this one buyer. And this one buyer could be anywhere at 3:30 on Saturday afternoon, but they're coming to this house. So there's intent. They want it.
Yeah.
So let's do a deal.
How often do you see, you know, the story, you always get that guy that's driving past, sees an aisle, pulls over, buys the house, drives off again. Is that? Have you had that happen?
Yeah. I've had it a couple of times. The craziest one. I have had it a couple of times. The craziest one was out the back of Riverston.
Yeah.
End of the afternoon on a Sunday, and in the middle of the auction, old mate drives past in a ute and yells out, $1 million.
So he's not even registered.
He just yells out $1 million. And everybody giggled, and he was just coming down the street to see what was going on, and he was doing a U-turn.
It hasn't even gone into the property.
Hasn't even come into the property, hasn't been in the property, hasn't seen the
contract. Riverston, though, are we looking at a land bank or something?
Yeah, it was a little old three-bedder.
Okay.
Decent rental.
Yeah. So the value's all on the land.
But the value was in the land.
Yes. Yeah.
Or potential development.
Yeah.
But this guy didn't know that because he hadn't even looked at the contract before. This property was new, for all intents and purposes, random.
Yeah.
Did a U-turn at the end of the street and came back and then pulled up and decided to watch the auction.
Yeah.
And we all sort of giggled and laughed and, here he comes. And he said, what is the bid?
Yeah.
And I said, the bid's here at the front. The bid's at $670,000 and we're actually on the market and selling. He goes, bugger me. He goes, $680,000. And I said, you can't be that you're not registered. He said, can I register? I said, of course you can.
Yeah.
The lady in the lead wasn't happy with me because she's like, well, hang on a second. I had this thing. You're in the market. You're selling the property. It's $670,000. It's mine. I said, well, unless I drop the hammer, it's not. I work for the vendor. My objective is to get market value for the house. And if the gentleman would like to ensure that market value was above 670, I have to be the arbiter of that.
Yeah.
He got registered to bid and he bid and bid and bid. And we had a little bit of a bidding war. I think we ended up getting into the 680s or the 690s and he bought the property. His final bid was a $500 bid and he bought it sight unseen from driving past, from a heckle. And instead of dismissing him, I engaged him to a degree. Yeah. And lo and behold, he bought the thing.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you've touched on some important things there that some of our beginners might not understand. So you've got to be registered, obviously, to bid upon. So just walk us through for buyers that aren't experienced, all that side.
Yeah, look, legislation is different around the country. And some states and territories, registration isn't compulsory. I really wish it was. And I think when we're in an age of consumer protection and the vendor being, you know, the person that we're representing, I think it should be beholden. And look, some agencies, despite their state or territory regulation of not having to register, will register anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important to know who you're dealing with and have verification of their identity and where they live and then have recourse should they slink off into the crowd at the end of the auction and disappear.
Yeah, that's
fine. Not that I'm aware that it happens often or at all, but I just think it's good due diligence to be knowing who we're dealing with.
Yeah.
Commercial auctions, you don't have to be registered in the state of New South Wales. Most agencies' good practice is to register anyway. But registration is important. We collect the details. You cannot turn up to an auction, particularly here in the state of New South Wales, put your hand up and bid. You must be registered to participate.
Yeah. Okay. So look, what kind of mistakes do you actually see buyers usually make at an auction?
Look, I don't want to say getting emotional because emotional responses
achieve the best price.
Yeah, as an auctioneer, my skill and my calling card is my ability to keep that tenor and that flow and that rhythm and that momentum in an engaging mannerism that keeps people playing their part. I liken myself to a conductor and I'm trying to get a good rhythm and a good melody and get the bidders going, get them flowing. And I want them caught up in that rhythm and that melody. So when I ask for their part, they're complicit and they play their part. They give me their bid also because they're emotionally caught up. I demonstrate when I'm talking to vendors and I'm discussing setting their reserve, and a reserve should never be set at the price you'd love or the price you want. It should be set at the price you could take. Because more people have typically got that budget and then my ability that comes to the fore, which is to get them involved and keep the energy going, keep the momentum. And the high prices are from that ebb and that flow, but they're from here, not from here.
Yeah. I suppose a lot of people wait until the property is announced on the market. Can you explain just for our listeners?
Yep.
You know, once they hit the reserve price, what that means and how that then changes the auction.
Yeah, so the reserve is a secret between the auctioneer, the vendors, and the agent. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit like Schrodinger's cat. It doesn't exist in the marketplace unless I say that it exists. So let's say, hypothetically, the reserve on a property is $1 million. If I've got the ebb and the flow of the auction going, and as I said, I'm the conductor and it's going, and the bid's at 990,000 and 95 now when we go to $1 million, the bid's at $1 million and $1 million and five now and $1 million and 10 now, madam, would you take me to 20 and 20, come with me at 30.
Feeling anxious already.
Okay, so yeah. And you're seasoned, you know. The reserve is $1 million. But I've got a good ebb and a good flow and a good rhythm. There was no need to call the property on the market. I just keep going. Far be it from me to interrupt and tell everybody we're on the market. Some people can then perceive from that moment onwards, I'm overpaying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I'm overpaying. The reserve was $1 million. Why would I bid $1,000,035? So I keep the auction going, Schrodinger's cat. If I haven't announced the property on the market, it's not on the market because the buyers don't know that it's on the market. I'm the only person.
So when we say on the market, we mean is that it's not going to get passed in. We're passing
on the market,
point of no return.
On the market, the point of no return, the vendor is selling the property, highest bidder is coming inside.
Yep.
We are selling.
Yeah.
We are selling. But it is important when you make that announcement. Prematurely, you might slow down the bidding. The buyers might pump the brakes. They might feel like they're overpaying and they might stop. If you've got a good rhythm and you've got a good flow, a good auctioneer is just going to keep it going. I've had properties literally, I've been $200,000, $225,000 above the reserve, and then somebody at the back says, are we on the market? I said, well, sir, I'll tell you what, we... Yeah, and it is. Yeah, you've done it.
Yeah.
And then I will typically say, look, I'll tell you what, give me 10 more and I'll go and talk to the owner.
Yep.
Or would it change your mind? Would you bid if we were?
Mm-hmm.
And see if I can re-engage that buyer. But yeah, it's up to my discretion as to when I call a property on the market. But it is a key word and a key phrase that a more seasoned buyer or buyer's advocate will wait for. There are a lot of people who don't want to be responsible for putting the property on the market. They're there to take the property off the market.
Yep.
Two dynamics.
Yep.
So they will sit back and they will wait and they will let the players play.
Yeah.
And then come in with hopefully their sledgehammer at the end and just take it off the market.
Okay. So for beginners out there, what kind of a strategy would you recommend to keep them calm and confident in an auction?
It's hard in that atmosphere.
Yeah.
You want to be educated. You want to have gone to some auctions and done some research and maybe seen a couple of auctioneers and a couple of teams and how they play these things.
Yeah, go and observe.
Go and observe. I think making yourself known to the agent as well. There isn't. Oh, look, I've seen some strategy and some gameplay from some buyers who've seen them sit back in the corner quietly. The auctioneer's looking this way because these are the buyers who've identified themselves. These are the buyers who the agent said, I've spoken to these buyers during the campaign. These are the keen ones. Mm. And lo and behold, there's been this wallflower at the back who hasn't engaged with the agent through the campaign. They just don't like dealing with agents.
That's me.
Yeah, okay. You do your research. Yeah. You know your stuff. You've done your numbers. Yep. Is it viable? Does it stack up? Is the rental yield, you know, going to pull?
What is it, all the numbers work out?
He's silent but deadly.
And then you time your run.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is totally fine, but I would say that unless you're a seasoned professional like yourself who knew what you were doing in that instinct and that instance, I would be saying to just make sure you're known to the agent so that we don't discount you or don't just put you up. But research. Like, you've got to know your area. You've got to know what's going on. You've got to know what this property truly is worth. You've got to know your budget as well.
Yep.
And then, look, I tell everybody, like, be a little bit flexible on that. Like, if you never know somebody else's budget. If you keep bidding, you'll find it. But to miss out on that dream home for particularly in the Sydney market, to miss out on that dream home for a $5,000 or $10,000 lunge at the contract at the end, that admittedly might be above your budget and admittedly might put you under some financial pressure. And I wouldn't advise anybody get themselves into trouble. Mm. However, the market in Sydney will reward you. Most likely by the time you settle. Most likely by the time you settle, the property is you've made it back.
Yeah.
Hang on to it for a year and more.
Yeah. Now, this is the thing I want to ask you about as an auctioneer, because as someone obviously that is not an auctioneer, but I show up as a buyer.
Yep.
Something is always interesting. Right at the end, the increments get smaller, right? Yes. We might go from 50s to 20s to 10. Yep. And then, you know, you might have the little limp at the end with hundreds or 200.
Depends where you are, but
Depends where you are. But when I've been given advice from people, they've always said, if you wait till the auction starts limping and then you throw 5K on it, it's not that you're overpaying by 5K, but you're making the jump for someone to overbid you bigger than what they thought they were going to have. So can you walk us through that as a strategy?
Spot on. Look, if analogy-wise, and I love an analogy, if you were in the 12th round of a prize fight and there was just you and the other fighter and you were duking it out and you're exhausted, you've gone 12 rounds and you're at the end and it's just these taps, physically these love taps, you're just trying to get to the end of the round, you go, you'd be better off conserving your energy. Letting a couple of taps come your way and then haymaker, or as best as you possibly could do. That's going to be your chance to either win the auction or impress the judges or whatever it might be. But it's that home run. It's that final swing for the fence. Mm. The amount of times that I've been at an auction where I have seen that glimmer of hope, $1,000 bid. I had one in Castle Hill the other week. We had 66 $1,000 bids.
Oh, how frustrating.
Wow. So two bidders, 33 each, staring each other down.
Yeah.
I can all but guarantee you, if after the second or third $1,000 bid, if one of them had just said, rounded me up to the next 50 and maybe spend a $32,000 bid or whatever, that would have ended the auction.
It's psychologically harder for the other person to go again.
But again, the public forum of auction, you want to know that you've just paid a little bit more than the other buyer.
Yeah.
So you just I get both sides of the equation. Mm. I'll just pay $1,000 more than somebody else. If you pay $1,000 more than somebody else to buy residential property or commercial property in Australia, Sydney especially, but if you pay $1,000 more than somebody else, you've had a win. Whether that's $500,000 above reserve is superfluous. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You paid $1,000 more than somebody else to buy a bricks and mortar and land asset in a country that is going to ensure that that asset keeps going up in value.
Yeah.
You paid $1,000 more. Who cares what the reserve was? There are a lot of agents who are really funny about promoting the reserve, or auctioneers who, you know, I don't think you should say that you sold a property for $183,000 above reserve. Why not? We sold it for $183,000 more than the vendor's expectation.
Yep.
The vendor's thrilled. That excitement gets the phone ringing, because now prospective vendors and people who are thinking about getting a market appraisal want to talk to that agent because that agent got the result. And then they go, oh, yeah, but what about the buyer? The buyer's going to feel shit looking at that result online, knowing that they paid.
They were willing.
They're happy.
They were there.
They're happy.
They were there. They're that's happy. They got the home that they wanted to. Yeah. And in a public forum, despite the reserve, they know that they only paid $1,000 more than what somebody else is willing to pay.
Yep.
Market value. They paid market value.
Yeah.
So I have no problem with disclosing reserves. I would love, actually, what I would love, and I'll down the barrel of the camera, what I would love if you walked into an auction property on auction day, and when you walked into the front door, up on the wall, the reserve.
Yeah.
Look, I think fair trading and the way in which guiding is done in the state of New South Wales, and the need to provide comparables, and the need to have your house in order behind the scenes.
Yeah.
I think the whole point of the cleanup that's happening right now, we're seeing agencies that are being put under the microscope because of underquoting and things that are going on. We need to make sure that the buyers who are turning up to our auctions.
Yeah.
Are being guided by the right guide, by the right comparables, and by the right recency of sales, so that they have a legitimate chance of buying. There are instances that I know of that 80% of the buyers in the crowd have no chance of buying that home.
Yep.
They've wasted their time attending. They've wasted their money on pest and building reports.
Yeah.
They shouldn't be there. They're paddle fodder. They are there for the sake of being there.
And I think that's a strategy for the agents to create hype.
Yep.
For the actual people who can afford to increase the price of the property. So you have so many people in there. And I know I've walked in, even myself bidding in auctions. I walk and go, holy shit, there's 60 people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you know.
57 of which can't afford it.
Can't afford it. That's right.
Yeah.
But still,
Yeah,
they're around. Psychologically, they're around. The agents know this.
Mm-hmm.
It makes them look good for the vendor.
Yep.
It puts pressure on the buyers,
yep.
You know, and it creates anxiety. And what happens in anxiety? You don't think straight and you overbid.
Yep.
Simple.
It does. Yep. It does happen. On the flip side, however, yep. 57 of those 60 bidders do nothing or they're out really early because their budgets are stretched and their budgets are stretched well under what you, as somebody who's done your research and is seasoned and are aware of what this property is actually worth. And all of a sudden, the chasm becomes obvious. There are 57 people here who can't afford this property. Yep. I am well head and shoulders above everybody else.
Yep.
I can now dig my heels in and negotiate pretty hard on this thing because the agent has brought the wrong buyers to this auction, and it can put the buyer in the driver's seat and it can backfire, and I've seen it happen spectacularly.
Okay, I've got a question for you. So what's your thoughts on listeners out there who aren't experienced in this? They absolutely love a particular property. They know they've got an auction day set. They've gone through the first opening on a Saturday.
Yes.
And I'm actually speaking, Amanda, you know about this. It's happening to me right now.
Okay.
And you throw a decent offer in there.
Yep.
Should they do it if they really like the place?
Yeah, I love calling auctions.
Oh, do you mean pre-auction?
Pre-auction.
Look, I love nothing more than I would rather call. If I have 10 bookings going ahead on a Saturday, I want to call all 10 of them. I just do. I love what I do, and I get a thrill from it. I get a kick from it. It's my lifeblood.
Yep.
I hate it when I wake up on a Saturday morning and I've had 8 sell prior and I've got to call 2. I'm like, that's not a good Saturday for me. I would rather, even if I pass them all in, I just want to call them.
Mm-hmm.
But you never know the vendor's motivation. You never know what their situation is or what they'd sell for or why they need to sell or their urgency, their impending settlement or their situation. I think it's always worth it.
Okay.
The double-edged sword is that you do then
expose yourself to your...
Well, you expose yourself, but you also then give the vendor an expectation, well, goodness me, well, if that's what I can get after 1 week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, oh, goodness, all we need is another 2 or 3 like that, and we're going to have a raging auction, and then maybe their expectation moves, and maybe you move the needle.
Yeah.
So I do think... I think the phrase is, and the phrase that I use commonly to anybody who approaches me...
Yeah.
On the sideline, and they're a would-be purchaser, and they say, Stu, look, we're thinking of maybe doing some auction research. We're thinking about buying. We're looking. What about pre-auction offers? You can stop auctions from happening, but you need to present an auction-stopping offer.
Yeah, that's right.
If you give the vendor an auction-stopping offer, the auction's not going ahead.
Yeah.
But you want to pick your timing and you want to know your numbers. And again, that comes down to research.
Of course.
And I would say the best deals that are done, and I don't say this because I'm on a buyer's agency podcast, the best deals that I see
before being
are through advocacy.
Yep.
Because the research has been done. And I tell everybody, you guys pay for yourselves. It's a service that more often than not gets the deal done before auction, gets the vendor happy. The agent's happy with the price; they're happy to promote it.
Yep.
But it's a researched and it's a measured offer that more often than not will win the day. So I'm definitely not against it.
Okay. Mm. Where, I guess, in Sydney, for listeners who are in Sydney, where do you see the? I won't call it hotspot.
Right. Okay.
Which suburbs have the hype at the moment?
Yeah,
you're seeing.
In talking to journalists from the Sydney Morning Herald and also from News Corp and news.com.au as regularly as I do, there seems to be a bit of a fascination with the hills in the northwest. I am here, so, that's my bread and butter. Mm. But I don't think I've been called as many times for a quote, not only about my weekend but about the market in general, about the data in general. And the data is neutral. The data is coming from, you know, from big data companies and data sources, and the data does suggest that the tenure of ownership here is resulting in most homeowners making the most amount of profit over 10 and 12 year cycles here in the Northwest.
Okay.
The metro line that's opened up that has now linked this area with the Sydney CBD. People
seen massive growth.
It's been exponential. It's been huge. And as somebody who's lived here my entire life, some of the results I get when I drop the hammer, it really defies any logic, but it's supply demand driven and lifestyle. So look, without a doubt, the hills in northwest of Sydney. But then again, I still think there are value buyers everywhere. I mean, but again, you got to do your research or engage somebody who's willing to do that for you.
Yep.
Can you walk us through, because there's a lot of misunderstanding and misinformation here around the 24 hours after an auction if the auction passes in.
Yep.
A lot of people believe that the highest underbidder gets 24 hours exclusive negotiation in that instance. Is that true?
That is not true.
There it is.
No, that is not true. Yeah. So first right of negotiation is basically it's a courtesy. It's a gentleman's rule. It's almost a handshake. It's as good as, you know.
Good as done.
So why is this beef out there?
First right of negotiation is literally after the auction, if you're the highest bidder, the reserve's $1 million. We got to 970 and the vendor said pass the property in.
Yeah.
I go up to the bidder at 970 and say, look, you come up to $1 million and it's yours. And the guy says, look, I'm not going to come up to $1 million. I'll come up to 980. I said, all right, well, I'm going to go put 980 to the vendor, but now I'm also going to go and talk to the other buyers.
Yeah.
There's your first right of negotiation. I came up to you. I made a beeline to you. And I said, if you pay $1 million, it's yours. And you said, no, I'm not going to pay $1 million. I'll go to 980. Mm-hmm. You just had your first right of negotiation.
So why do we have this myth that people get 24 hours? Where did that come from?
I have absolutely no idea.
You hear a lot of people.
You hear different things. Auction conditions last until midnight on the day of the auction.
Yeah.
I call an auction at 9 o'clock in the morning. We've got until midnight to negotiate an exclusive unconditional sale mm-hmm. under the contract as presented with no need to speak to solicitors and engage 66W certificates and things mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah.
So we can pass the property in at 9 o'clock. That buyer can go to other auctions, unsuccessful. All of a sudden, they're licking their wounds. They come back to us at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and say, you know what? We tried at three other auctions. We missed out. We're still engaged in this property. We'd like to counteroffer and we negotiate into the night. I've had agents turn up at my driveway at 11:30 at night. We put the iPhone light onto the contract and we're signing contracts on my bonnet. Up until the stroke of midnight, we're under auction conditions. There's no 24-hour grace. Mm-hmm. That's just not a thing. And first right of negotiation is a courtesy.
Okay.
I think there are a few things buyers in particular don't realize about auctions and their rights or their responsibilities during an auction.
Yeah.
There's a piece of advice you gave me a couple of years ago. I don't know if you'll remember giving me this advice. And it was something even I didn't know about mm-hmm. auctions. I mean, I'm an investor. I'm a bargain hunter.
Sure.
If I'm buying at auction, it's usually a PPOR.
Yes.
Or something I really want. And the advice you gave me on this one, and I didn't know this, you said don't because it was a property. It was a deceased estate.
Yep.
And they didn't have many buyers. And you said to me, well, hold off on registering until the auction's underway. Wait till the auction's dead and then register. And I didn't know you could register after an auction had started.
Yeah.
I thought you had to make yourself known up front. Yeah, I'm a bidder. I've got my paddle. Yep. I'm ready to rock and roll.
Yeah.
When you gave me that advice, I mean, it might be circumstance specific, but why might somebody not identify themselves up front?
That's a real
nuanced question.
It really is circumstantial. It really comes down to the reasons that they would want to be a little bit secretive about their engagement or why maybe they've dealt with that agency before or maybe they've been burnt at an auction before. Maybe they don't want to be used as leverage during an auction to push other buyers.
Mm-hmm. That's what was happening here.
And I do believe that that's what was happening there.
Yeah.
And I think the gamesmanship of it all was in your favour to almost push back against that agent and say, well, you know what, you could have engaged with me better during the campaign, you didn't, and now I'm going to play my game, and my game is that I'm going to sit back and wait. You do roll the dice. If the auctioneer is quick or time poor and not seasoned and knowing what they're doing, the property could get knocked down and sold before you've engaged. I would always advise that you register
pre-auction. The other reason you gave me that advice was to hold my terms hostage to my registration.
Yep.
So being a deceased estate, it was run down, all of that. I wanted an extended settlement. Yep. They weren't agreeing to the extended settlement. Yep. So you said, that's cool. Let the auction run. If they need you, they'll ask you.
They'll ask you.
And then you demand your terms.
Yep.
And that becomes your condition for registering.
Yep, yep. I purchased a property earlier in the year. I needed a 12-week settlement. Otherwise, I was not going to bid.
Yeah.
I got told I could have 8. I said, well, I'm not going to bid.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I'll come to the auction and watch. Very similar situation.
Yeah.
Okay.
I said, I'll come to the auction and watch. I turned up to the auction. There was a couple of other registered bidders. I knew my pre-auction offer and my pre-auction dialogue with the agent was good. And I knew that I was a chance of buying this property.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, the pushback during the middle of that open home, just before the auction, I got the agent making a beeline to me. Stewie, what if we could do 10? I said, no, I need 12.
Yeah.
The fact that they came to me and went from 8 to 10, I knew I was probably a couple of minutes away from getting my, my 12.
Yep.
And sure enough, 1 minute before the auction started, all right, Stewie, we'll do 12. It was about getting my terms.
Okay.
So my final question then, we've just identified a couple of ways buyers can take a bit of power back at auction. I know you're the auctioneer, but how?
Oh, look, hey, don't get me wrong. I want an empowered and informed buyer at my auction.
Yeah.
I want them making good decisions that they're comfortable with. And if it means getting them their terms or better equipping them, I want nothing more than a highly educated buyer at my auction, holding a paddle, ready to go. I don't mind a bit of back and forth. I don't mind a bit of sarcasm. I don't mind a little bit of pushback.
Bit of heckling.
I want that. I don't mind a bit of heckling, Amanda.
But I
want that. I want, you know, and that's why I genuinely say to everybody, not just because I'm on the podcast, I love an advocate. I love somebody who knows what they're doing.
Yep.
I love it.
Well, that's what I was going to say. How can buyers, you know, if they're not advocated for by us, how can they take back some of that power? Because people feel powerless at auctions, right? They feel that all the advantage is with the vendor.
Yes.
But again, there are ways. So, you know, hold your condition, your terms hostage or whatever it may be.
To a degree, yep.
What else can someone do? Just one final tip to have a bit more power as a buyer at an auction.
Look, I think knowledge is power. I think you've got to know your area. You've got to know what properties are selling for. If this thing is guided at 1.7, but everything around it is sold for 1.8, 1.825, 1.830, be prepared. Do your research. I think a lot of the pushback on what's going on at the moment and underquoting and it's sold for way more than I thought it would. Well, did you as a buyer do your research? Buyers cannot go into an auction naively thinking the guide plus 5% is going to be what it's worth.
Yeah.
You've got to know your stuff. You've got to know your suburb.
Just go to auctions. Even when you're not ready.
100%. Go to auctions even when you're not ready. 100%.
Yep.
Do your research. Get involved in what's going on and be aware because at the end of the day.
Desensitize yourself.
If you can, desensitize yourself and be aware of what an auction pressure cooker feels like, even from an outsider.
Yep.
But be aware. Do your research and just make sure that you're going into this thing armed with as much knowledge as you can.
Yep.
Because at the end of the day, if you are successful, there's a 30-year mortgage attached to it.
Yep.
There is fees. Than duties and things like that. You're not just going to buy a car. Mm-hmm. You're not just going to buy a piece of furniture. It's a big life-changing decision. You need to know your stuff.
For sure. Mm. Stu, last question and an important one.
Yes.
Listeners out there, what do they need to prepare themselves before they go into an auction? Because it is different from a private treaty.
It is.
It's calling off.
It's unconditional. Yep.
Good point. Explain. Very good point. And that's probably the question that most people who privately reach out to me via email or text message or Instagram and things like that, they want to know.
Yep.
I've never done this before. What do I need? You need to be finance approved.
Yep.
You need to make sure that if you are the highest bidder that you can service a deposit on the day.
Yeah.
New South Wales legislation is that 10% is in contract law, so you are liable for 10% of the purchase price on the day.
On the day, that's right. So let me get there. So that's just on the day they won the auction and that's just a transfer showing you that they've – in the nominated account.
Yeah, so that's a nominated into the agency's trust account is an EFT. And look, when that was brought into legislation, when 10% became legislation in contracts, the median house price of Sydney was nowhere near what it is now.
Mm.
I think that I can't remember the last time I did a 10%.
Yeah.
Most of my properties, the buyers have negotiated a 5% deposit
or
part payment. What they will do is the banking institution has a $50,000 limit. They didn't go to the bank and increase their limit.
Mm-hmm.
They'll do $50,000 on the Saturday. Once midnight clocks over and their limits are reset, they will then wake up on Sunday morning and do another $50,000.
Yep.
And then on Monday morning, they'll walk straight into the bank and do the rest of the transaction. Look, back in the day when electronic funds, like back when I first started auctioning, we would hold a check until Monday morning.
Yep.
Do you remember on settlement days you'd have to go and get all the different
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And disbursements and all that sort of stuff. And it was just checks and checks.
Now it's all electronic.
And look, there's no huge risk. I mean, I would rather have $30,000 on auction day, $30,000 the next day, and then the balance on Monday than holding a paper check that could be worth absolutely nothing from a buyer who might have not sent to their name.
Yep. Yeah.
So the digital space has helped. There are apps at the moment that despite your banking transfer limit will be able to grab the whole lot and transfer it in, like Macquarie Bank have a facility that the agents can use. So look, to answer your question, you've got to be aware that when the hammer drops, if it drops in your favour, you are the buyer. You are obligated.
That's right.
You've got to be ready.
You've got to be ready. You should have engaged a solicitor or conveyancer because we're going to need to put your solicitor or conveyance details on the contract of sale so that we can deliver it to them.
So before showing up, they've obviously negotiated terms through their solicitors?
Without a doubt. You want to know that if the settlement on contract is 42 days, if
that's what
you're offered and you request a contract prior to the auction
You should always request a contract prior to the auction.
That's right.
You need to know, is there a caveat on it? What about the zoning? What about the sewer diagram? You want to engage a solicitor or a conveyancer who is,
on top of all those things.
What they do.
For sure.
Yeah, you're not getting your call.
And the other thing, building and pest inspections.
Building and pest inspections. Look, there are a lot of companies who obviously provide these services in conjunction with real estate agents and you can go and pay a nominal fee. And then if you are the purchaser, you pay the full fee.
Yep.
And that helps in a market like we're in now. We're in, high demand, low stock. People are missing out week after week. It's taking most buyers, you know, maybe six auctions before they win one. Mm-hmm. They might inspect 20 properties. Are they going to want to pay for 20 building reports or 20 pest reports?
Yeah.
It's a very expensive 20 exercise.
20 contract reviews now because solicitors are starting to charge for that.
Yep.
They never used to.
No, they never used to, but they are now. So, yeah, so those services, those third-party aggregating services mm-hmm. that you only pay to download the report and then if you're the successful purchase, then you pay the balance, they help. But, yeah, you want to know what you're buying. And sometimes that might mean getting your own independent as well.
Yep.
The skepticism with anything, if an agency is providing a report, are they using the plumber that they like? Are they using the builder that they like? Are they using the pest inspector that they like?
Yep.
I would like to think that given that these things are legal documents, that they are performed by neutral, independent people who have got their name on that report, so they're going to give you a good report.
Yeah. Mm.
But if you want to go and get your independent one, make sure you've done that as well.
And thank you very much, Stu, for coming onto the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
No problem, Amanda.
Thank you.
Thank you. And for anyone else out there who wants to reach out and have a chat with us, just go to propertysessions.com.au/15. That's the number 15, or the link below. And until next time, see you soon.